Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome back to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, you're face to face with the man who sold the world. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick. That's kind of a melancholy note to begin on, but we are back.
Yeah.
Woo! Wait till you hear the quote for the next one.
Oh, excellent.
Like, it's themed, okay? I took it hard. But no, we are back. This is a moment of celebration for us. We are so pleased to be recording new episodes. This isn't an update to an old episode. This is brand new.
Yeah, we had to, like, do research and, think about things again.
I had to go to Las Vegas.
Oh, man. That is an intense podcast episode.
Yeah. Jonathan, be straight with me.
Sure.
How futuristic were the buffets?
I ate at two buffets, neither of which felt particularly futuristic, although I started to question my recent decisions after I started eating them. So I was really reflecting on the past, essentially the specific moments that led up to me going to a buffet.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really think so much about the future, which was pretty evident by the way I was eating.
Question number two about Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Is anybody working on the packet bread from The Force Awakens?
As far as I can tell, no. But keep in mind that we're talking about CES 2016 in this episode and some of the forward-thinking technology I saw there. CES is enormous. I mean, the number that was thrown around for 2015, and I don't know that this is accurate for 2016, was that it had 2.2 million square feet of exhibit space across the Las Vegas Convention Center, the Sands, as well as a bunch of hotel suites. So it's just enormous,
and upwards of 1,000 vendors, like show
close to 4,000 at this point.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oof. Yeah. And so some of them are huge. Like, some of those booths are enormous, and you could fit like 40 booths in one of the big ones, like Intel or Sony.
In the future, we will have booths that take up entire buildings.
That's kind of what it feels like. And of course, not all of the technology on display there is particularly forward thinking. Some of it is just, you know, the latest in stereo systems.
Yeah.
And it's not that they're
TVs,
bad.
TVs, refrigerators, all
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Right. It's not that technology is subpar or anything like that. It's just not the kind of stuff we associate with, you know, all right, what's sort of the groundbreaking, pioneering tech out
yeah.
there?
Yeah. What's going to drive our very lives over the next 20 to 40 years?
Yeah, and we want exactly 20 to 40 years. Oh, it's good to be back. But also we wanted to, I want to stress this is a show about consumer technology.
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't expect to see tech that is like the super prototype, cutting edge, you know, we're 10 years away from seeing this implemented kind of stuff. You tend to see stuff that in general, you know, you're talking about possibly a product coming out in the next year.
I imagine there's not like a DARPA booth.
Strangely enough, you would be incorrect.
Oh, really?
Only in the sense
what?
That DARPA has a presence at CES, because often they end up being, people who end up working for DARPA also end up working on these other
sure.
projects. Like Toyota
so
has
it could
a
be
couple,
like recruitment and stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, Toyota had a couple of former DARPA executives join their artificial intelligence research facility, for example.
It's so much fun.
Yeah, it's really interesting stuff. And NASA has a booth there too, actually at CES.
Okay, so actually what you're saying here is that there's so much going on there that you don't know for sure that there wasn't an entire wing devoted to the bread from The Force Awakens.
There could have been.
Okay.
I did not witness it myself. But then usually when I get home, the first thing that happens is I start looking at some of the footage from CES, and it looks like it's a totally different show than the one I went to, just because my experience was so limited.
I just want to assure you listeners, by the way, who might be worrying, if you haven't seen The Force Awakens yet, the bread is not a spoiler. This is no major plot point.
No, the bread doesn't spoil. That's what makes it futuristic. All right, so we wanted to talk about the actual technology that I did witness and read up on as well while at CES. So these are just some examples of some of the stuff I saw personally. Keep in mind, this is not an exhaustive list. This doesn't include all the other things that I didn't get around to seeing. So, for example, I don't have any AR or VR stuff really listed here, and that's because I never got a chance to go to that part of the show floor. That's how big this show is. And I didn't even get a chance to go to where all the drones and robots are because I was running short on time. But
I'd guess the lines for the AR and VR stuff are really long.
They were. And in fact, I think I might be mistaken, but I think Oculus decided to have a reservations only approach. So you had to actually book a time to go and get a demonstration of the Oculus technology. I might be incorrect about that because I never went to see it. But one thing I did get to see was Intel's booth. I mentioned them earlier. And one of the reasons I think Intel is really interesting when you go to CES is Intel's known for making the sensors and processors that make other technology work.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They don't tend to be the company you would think of for a finished product. They
make the guts of consumer products.
Exactly. So most of the stuff you see on display at Intel is actually the representation of a partnership with some other company or multiple companies, where the insides are Intel powered. And they showed off a couple of different things that, were implemented in different ways. One of them was Intel Curie. And this is, it looks like just a little microprocessor. It's essentially a very simple computer on a chip system.
Mm-hmm. It's about the size and shape of a button.
Yeah, it's tiny, tiny. And it has six-axis accelerometers and gyroscopes in there, as well as a means of communicating over Bluetooth low-energy protocols. So it sips at power. It has a tiny little battery that is dedicated just to this device. And this is something you would embed in other things, like a wearable technology or, as was the case in some of the demonstrations, sporting equipment. So we saw it in, like, snowboards and bicycles. And one of the things it could do is actually measure rotation in real time. So imagine you're watching the X Games, like the Winter X Games, and you see a snowboarder leap into the air and start doing all those crazy twisty-turny things, you could get real-time update on exactly what sort of maneuvers that person was doing, and including, like, to the degree, an exact explanation of what they're doing.
So it could be like, I'm sorry, that looked like a 1080, but it was not. This is snowboarding 1060, and you have failed.
That you could get that specific, yeah. I don't know that that's going to get to the point of judging, but you could at least, you know, as someone watching it, you could have a live feed that was just giving you the data from the Intel Curie processor.
Oh, come
nice.
On. We always use new technology to judge better.
That's true.
That's what humans do.
Right.
Casting
we wanna,
of shade
yeah.
is important, right?
I mean, you can't bribe the sensor.
No. No, it's not subjective. It is actually quantifying something that before we would just sort of say, that was very impressive. Now we can say exactly to what degree that was impressive.
Now I have a question. You said it's called the Curie, spelled C-U-R-I-E. I assume, is that named after the Curies like Marie and Pierre?
That was my assumption. It's usually Intel tends to name a lot of their products after places, specifically places that are around Intel's headquarters. But in this case, I think it was specifically after the Curies. But that's my guess. I didn't actually ask anyone there. I was too busy looking at some of the other implementations. Like, they had them embedded in gloves, and then they would play air guitar and get actual music out of it. There, at the Intel press conference, which I did not attend, I only watched the video, it's just as awkward as it sounds. Imagine an Intel executive coming out wearing a do-rag.
Oh, no.
And having these gloves on and then playing either air guitar or air drums. And you'd actually get, music playing out of this. And then, of course,
he looks like he's having some kind of episode.
Possibly. That would not be outside the realm of plausibility, should you watch this video, that you would have that reaction. Also, it's just, there were a couple of grandiose comments that, kind of like not quite to the extent of music will change forever or we don't need guitars anymore, but kind of going and like you could see an implication there.
Uh-huh.
And this is one of those things where you think, really? I mean, it's impressive. It's kind of cool and fun. I could see that being an interesting implementation of that. But there were other, demos as well. They actually, one I got to try, they had these bracelets with LEDs in them, and the LEDs would light up whenever you were using the bracelet properly. They had this big curved display that had digital little fish on them. Mm-hmm. And when you would wave the bracelet around in front of it, it could capture the fish's attention. You could get a little school of fish, and you could make them spiral around and direct them to different parts. And they had about, you know, a dozen people or so lined up on this thing, all kind of stealing each other's fish. And it was, again, just a demonstration that this thing could fit into really small stuff. I mean, it wasn't a practical demonstration of the power of this. It was more of a practical demonstration of, it's so small and it's like self-contained in the sense that it's pretty much everything you need to do some basic control that was really the power of that demonstration.
Yeah, yeah. On a more practical level, I suspect that it would be implemented into like the fitness tracking technology kind of stuff, partially because the tech that comes from Curie comes from the company Basis, which Intel bought back in March of 2014. I read this interview, this really good interview with Intel's Vice President Mike Bell in the internet publication Alfer.
I had never heard of that.
I had never heard of before.
Interesting.
But it apparently exists. And he was talking about how they're working on making technology like this adaptive to every individual who uses it, you know, like learning what it looks like when you, Joe, go running or play racquetball or are sleeping.
You don't want to know what that looks like.
Well, maybe Intel does. Maybe maybe you want statistics on how well you're running, how your body is moving, all of your heartbeat, kind of, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Maybe in what point of any given physical activity do you see your physical performance start to drop? Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of people these days are min-maxing their own bodies in fitness tracker kind of ways. Which
I work on just maxing. It's mostly through the buffets.
But you know, he was talking about how for a lot of this technology today, it's geared towards the average user, and that there's really no such thing as the average user. Of course, we're all in our own ways outliers.
Sure.
And so, you know, making something that can adapt and can learn what you do is a lot more useful to any given human.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. Now, sometimes I wonder about, say, the fitness tracker on my phone. It has an estimate of how many steps you took today, but that's got to be based on some averaging and some estimating because it doesn't really know for sure.
Yeah, it's not like it's a pedometer.
What if my gait is kind of weird?
Sure.
Or
what if you were skipping?
I just don't know how accurate it is.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. I mean, especially if it's something where it's just estimating based upon the speed and distance that you are traveling. So in other words, if there's not a pedometer, if there's nothing like – if the accelerometer isn't trying to gauge an actual step, then you could do something like jump on a moving sidewalk. And just because of the speed and distance, it's going to say, oh, well, that includes those are steps too.
Yeah. Oh, I like it when I know sometimes it's wrong because occasionally it tells me that I bicycled for 15 minutes today and I have not ridden a bicycle.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a lot of other potential applications of this. Again, this was really a proof of concept in the sense that Intel could say, you probably have ideas of what you want to do. We make the stuff that makes your ideas possible.
Yeah.
And another example of that was their RealSense technology, which is pretty similar to the way the Kinect sensor works for the Xbox. It actually contains three cameras. It's a system that uses three cameras. One of them is in the optical spectrum. It's like a 1080 high definition camera. One is an infrared camera and one's more of an infrared projector. So the idea being that using this combination, you can create a system that is able to sense objects in depth. And so you could put it into a laptop. They had several laptops on display where that was part of the laptop camera. So it wasn't just a regular camera. You could also use it for gesture controls and that kind of thing.
I've also read that Intel is looking to use RealSense to let your device, your laptop, your phone, your tablet, whatever, watch your reactions to what you're experiencing on mm-hmm. that device, like whether you're happy or sad or bored. And I'm not sure why.
Yeah, let me get back to that, because okay. there's something specific I want to talk to you guys about. Didn't put it in the notes, but it's called Smart Me Up. it might have been Smart Me App, but it's a
Smart Me Up and Never Stop.
It may be. It was an app with facial recognition technology that also could recognize mood. I'll get back to that because it's similar to what you're saying, Lauren.
Okay, all right, but
you could also put this in other technology too. One of the examples they had was the Hover Butler, and the Hover Butler is essentially, think of one of those personal transportation devices that often are called hoverboards, which Joe, I know you object to the term hoverboard for something that uses wheels to
get
around. It
does not, in fact, hover.
So, yeah. But this is a Hover Butler.
It's a Hover Butler.
So, does it catch on fire?
It did not in the presentation, and considering who is behind it, I would suspect it would not catch on fire. But it's a
fire butler.
It's like
bringing you fire, sir.
Perhaps they had called it Prometheus, but it's a it's like a hoverboard, so you can stand on it and wheel around just mm-hmm. as you would with one of those. But it has kind of a little central post that extends up a little bit from the base, and you can convert it into a robot. And so the actual stem will switch a little bit, and a little digital screen will pop out, and these cute little eyes are there, and it can talk to you, and you can even have it do things like answer the door and stuff, or at least go and look at who's at the door. There are cameras embedded in it, so uh-huh. you can get live streaming video, and it uses RealSense to detect objects in its environment and maneuver around them. And my favorite part was when they added arms to it. There was a segment on the back that you could unscrew. And then you could plug in a physical extension to this robot. And in this case, they plugged in a physical extension that were a pair of arms. And they let the robot know. It says, "Okay, robot, you have arms now." He says, "These are my arms." And it lifts its arms up and then goes, "Awesome." And it was in the demo, and everyone was like, "Aw."
That's adorable. You guys just Hover Butler. What a time to be alive, am I right?
Yeah.
Someone named a product that. But B, the people who named a product that, it's a project from Segway, and Segway's new owners, Ninebot. Mm-hmm. So, you guys, Segway is still a thing. Yay!
Which is why expect it probably doesn't burst into flame.
Well, hold on. Did Segway not make the other hoverboards?
No.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. In fact, there were.
This is a different, totally different thing.
Yeah, the hoverboard stuff, like, there actually are some patent disputes about whether some of them have infringed upon Segway's patents. There have actually been some threats of lawsuits. But the interesting thing here, and Lauren, I know you can talk about this a little bit too, is that while you might think, oh, well, that's a very cute idea, this idea of a robot slash personal transportation device, that's adorable. They're also looking at involving other parties by making it an open platform, both from software and hardware. And I remember, like, right here in our notes, you've got a little bit about using Android operating systems in order to do that.
Intel so far has been pairing these technologies with Android and trying to encourage independent developers to really dive in and find new cool ways to use it, like you were saying earlier.
Yeah, and the same thing with the ARM extension I was talking about. That's just one potential hardware piece that you could attach to this thing.
I'm thinking articulated spider legs.
Right. Or tentacles, you know.
Ooh.
Or just dart guns.
Fire extinguisher extensions to put out your hoverboard fires.
Right, right. So, "Uncle, no!" Yeah. "Why did you teach me to love?" We might be a little loopy after our long hiatus. It was, again, like, meant to sort of demonstrate the potential. Possibly with the Hover Butler, more of an actual potential product. I don't know who that market is? Like, I don't...
Well, you know, it's combining those, you know, people with limited mobility or any time that you've got a, you know, that like office robotic avatar that we've talked about a few times on the show, like being able to plug that into something like that would allow not having your office avatar just bump into doors continually.
True.
Must be, like, way less embarrassing.
I think it would be hilarious to be fired by the hover butler because it would be so adorable. You couldn't be mad about it.
Yes, back up your things.
It doesn't come across like that at all. The voice is so cute. But
I mean, I think the cuteness has got to be a factor there, right? You're asking who would be interested in it. I mean, there's going to be a certain audience for things that are robotic novelties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just also, I imagine, and I don't know what the price would be for this particular thing, but I would imagine it would be pretty expensive. I mean, you're talking about Segway technology, and Segways were not known for being cheap. They weren't really known for anything other than that PR
being,
blast.
Being sort of goofy.
Yeah. I remember, I still distinctly remember the day when Good Morning America unveiled what IT was, because before that they called it either Project Ginger or IT, and then they had the reveal that this is the Segway. And I remember sitting there thinking, what? This? But, you know, it was...
And your reaction was thus the whole world's reaction.
Yeah, I did not intend to be a pioneer in that space. But there were a lot of other things I got to see as well. So that was in the central hall of the Las Vegas Convention Center. That's where a lot of the really big companies like Sony and Panasonic and things like that are there. And Intel is always in the central hall. But the next one that I looked at was over in the south hall of the convention center. And this was one of those things that I would have totally missed. I would have overlooked it, except a friend of mine, Ayaz Akhtar of CNET, mm-hmm. had mentioned he had heard something about it and gave me the heads up. And so I put it on our list of things we had to check out.
Oh, I'm so glad because I'm so excited about this one.
Yeah, this is Genworth Financial, which is a long-term care insurance company. And you might think, well, why are they at CES? I mean, and what exactly is long-term care insurance? Well, it's insurance that you would enter into, you would hold a policy for in order to get reimbursed for long-term care for people who cannot care for themselves, typically the elderly, but not necessarily just the elderly. Mm-hmm. But it's for services like assisted living, so feeding and bathing and dressing and that sort of stuff. That these are services that you have to pay for. Well, this kind of insurance gives you a reimbursement, a daily reimbursement. And it's a really important idea, particularly with a growing aging population, but it's also a tricky one to talk about with younger people to get across, you know, what it's like to go through these experiences.
Right. I mean, people, they just think they're going to be young and strong forever.
Or even if they're thinking about like a parent that they might be caring for.
Yeah.
It's still an experience that's so far removed from their own personal experience. It's hard to have that kind of sympathy, right?
And frankly, this isn't something we usually want to think about.
Right.
Oh, sure. Well, and also it's this kind of issue of sympathy and empathy with any kind of patient is a huge issue in the medical industry. And it's been luckily getting increased attention in the past couple of decades, but no one has really come up with a really good solution for it yet. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd hazard that most human people want to be sympathetic to the plight of their fellows. Yes.
At least in the abstract.
Yeah.
Sure. Hypothetically. But, you know, A, like you said, like it's hard to understand what people are going through if you've never had any kind of similar symptom. And B, there are unfortunately groups of people that society is sort of trained to disbelieve about their symptoms. Women and the elderly in particular are two groups that numerous studies have indicated receive less medical care for equal symptoms reported. So, since society is a really hard thing to change, especially quickly, it's really cool that work is being done to fix part A of this equation, being able to let people better sympathize with those folks. And that is through this project.
Yeah, it's actually called the aging experience. So how do you convey what is an abstract idea into a real actual experience for someone who otherwise would never have these symptoms that often come along with aging?
A rapid aging drug.
That would be one way of doing it, but sadly not necessarily reversible. A more kind way of doing this is to simulate it. And to do that, Genworth turned to a company called Applied Minds.
All right.
Now, Applied Minds was founded in 2000 by a couple of former Disney Imagineers. So these were engineers who really thought outside the box in order to create stuff. And one of those two, Bran Farren, is still with the company. And in fact, I got to meet him. He was the person who led the demonstration that I was part of. I was actually put into this piece of technology, which was an exoskeleton. Now, when we talk about exoskeletons, we are normally talking about technology meant to increase your abilities.
Yeah, power you up.
Yeah, yeah. So you can
so it's
lift
Starship
heavy things.
Troopers or something like that.
Throw aliens.
Or at least walk, right? Like there are the exoskeletons that are designed for people who have lost mobility and have learned to walk again, that sort of stuff. Not the case with the aging simulator.
Yeah.
It was actually meant to diminish your physical capabilities rather than enhance them. Now, I even got to do the whole demonstration. I got to put the whole thing on. There's actually a video up. If you haven't seen the video, you can go to Forward Thinking and check it out.
And you look like Iron Man in this thing.
A very doughy Iron Man. Yeah. I was very aware of how tight those straps were. But it was an interesting experience. And so it consists of a helmet, which has a heads-up display. Actually has two cameras mounted on the outside, so where your eyes would be, so you get the stereoscopic vision. That feed is fed directly to monitors inside the helmet. And there's no latency that I could detect, which is fantastic. Because if there's latency, that means when you turn your head, you notice there's a delay between when you turn and what you see.
Right. It's the thing that makes people puke when they're using bad VR.
Yes.
Right, right.
Yeah. So
it's kind of like feeling seasick. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
when I didn't notice any of that.
You aren't.
Exactly. Yeah. Your brain is like, your body is going through one thing, but your senses are doing something else. So we're just going to dump everything in your stomach right now. All right, guys, out. Like, because I'm
best
not sure,
plan.
Not
Thanks,
sure
body.
What else to do.
So, if this is supposed to simulate the debilitating effects of age or disability, shouldn't it have had some latency to kind of make you feel even worse?
No, because they said specifically that they didn't want people to become nauseated and they didn't want to simulate actual pain. They said those were the elements that are not part of the experience because they want you to be able to have sort of a logical reaction as well
head.
As an emotional one.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Well, but they did alter your vision in a couple ways, right?
Absolutely, yeah. The fact that it was a video feed meant that they could interrupt the signal from the cameras to the monitors in different ways. So in one point, they gave me tunnel vision. Hmm. So the periphery of my vision started to close in and close in and close in until I only had a small window that I could see through, and even that was blurry.
Yeah, yeah.
Very disorienting. They did the opposite, where I had a blurry section in front of my vision and the peripheral was a little more clear. They also ended up giving me the experience of having a cataract in one eye. My right side got all milky white, and I couldn't see through it very well. Also, they kept on cranking up the thing as the demo was going on for that section. So while it would first be disorienting, it would get progressively worse as that section of the demo went on. And I would start thinking, like, you are going to reverse this, right? Because I'm not able to see anything. This is kind of terrifying.
Wow. Now, did they also have you, like, doing tasks or running through an obstacle course?
I'll get to that. So next they put the helmet also has headphones. So they can mess with your hearing, right? Mm-hmm. There's a external microphone that picks up all the audio and feeds it into the headphones, but they can also change that. So they introduced tinnitus, also known as the ringing of the ears. Mm-hmm. If you've ever been to a loud show and you had your ears kind of ring for a little while after that, sometimes that doesn't go away.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can develop chronic tinnitus and it will be there forever. And you might be able to take some medication to help mitigate it. But it's always there. I've experienced tinnitus on more than a few occasions, being the fan of punk rock that I am. But fortunately, don't have it as a chronic condition. But this was, I mean, I was very familiar with mm-hmm. the experience when they started playing. Because immediately I said, oh, it's tinnitus. He's like, yep, you're absolutely right. They also started to muffle my hearing. Mm-hmm. So they didn't cut it off entirely, but they started cutting out the bass and high notes that or high pitches that I could hear. They started to blur out the middle ones too. So I was starting to get hard to make out what was being said. Like I could hear that someone was talking, but I couldn't easily understand them. Oh, and they gave me the experience that I'm sure you guys have heard about where they fed my own audio back to me on a couple of milliseconds delay.
Oh, yeah.
And then they tried to make me say stuff. So I started talking like this, because hearing yourself on a short delay starts to mess with your ability to form words.
If anyone's ever had like a really bad sinus infection or something like that, you might have experienced something to that extent where just your ears are not functioning quite the way. I've recently recovered from a very bad sinus infection, which is why I bring it up.
I've had it happen before when recording stuff and had my own feed kind of coming back in to my headphones, where it was on that short delay, and I thought, I've got to fix this because otherwise I'm not going to be able to talk at all. And then you won't even think it's a Jonathan Strickland show because, come on,
ooh,
guys.
Yeah. But, it's like a weird parallel dimension.
I know, right? It's a show that Jonathan's on and he didn't talk. That's not
what?
Right. So then the other piece of this, obviously, is the actual body, the exoskeleton body, which weighed 40 pounds, by the way, strapped snugly in several locations across my body and at all the major joints. So my shoulders and my elbows, my hips and my knees. There are motors that can increase torque at those joints, so make it more difficult for you to move. And they had me do things like reach up, pretend like I'm climbing a rope, and then they started to lock up my shoulders and elbows, so it suddenly became much more difficult. And in the coup de grace, they had me walk on a treadmill. So that was the part where it wasn't an obstacle course, but it was a treadmill. And so I'm walking at a decent pace for someone who's wearing an exoskeleton, which already restricts your movement a little bit. It's not like I could go jogging through the CES show floor wearing this thing.
Sure.
But then they started to lock up my hips and my knees. It was really disorienting when they only did one side.
Oh, wow.
Because then I could move, like, I think it was my left leg I could move freely, but my right leg was locked up. And so I was lurching around quite a bit. It was a really interesting and enlightening experience to go through that and feel what that was like. And so to then be able to extrapolate that experience in and think about other people going through that, it does create more of not just a sense of awareness, but one of empathy and sympathy for people going through that situation. And I thought it was absolutely a phenomenal idea, not just for that compassion, which I think is incredibly important, but also you could potentially use this for engineers who are developing products for the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, they had said that they had had some developers for apps interested in having them come out with an exoskeleton so the developers could experience it themselves, because they're trying to develop apps meant for senior citizens. And by actually experiencing these things, it may change the way they think about the presentation and interaction of those apps, because now they've actually
finally understand
it. Yeah.
what the need is
exactly.
Yeah.
Because sometimes engineers set out to solve a problem, but it turns out it was the wrong problem to try and solve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And having this personal experience means it's more likely that they would actually hit the target they're aiming for.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really an interesting thing. And the Applied Minds folks, by the way, super nice. They sat down and chatted with us, and they were really passionate about what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really encouraging to have that conversation as well. And not just like, sometimes when you go to CES, you encounter people who are perfectly nice, but they are PR people who have been hired to represent a booth. But these were folks who actually work for the company, and so they had a real sense of investment, right? It wasn't just like,
their job to stand there and talk.
Yeah,
about
not
it.
A gun for hire type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was really cool.
Another thing, of course, this show is sponsored by Toyota, so you did spend a bit of time checking out some of the concept cars
at CES. Yeah, concept cars and also just the underlying technology. So Toyota's big thing was they went into more detail about their $1 billion investment in artificial intelligence. They actually made a really good point that I had not really thought about in a concrete way, which is that they mention, AI, autonomous car technology is at a point right now where your standard driving, like you're under your standard scenarios, it's pretty good. Like we have seen the demonstration that technology is pretty mature. It's when you get to the outliers, the weird situations that don't happen all the time, but can happen, things that you don't necessarily anticipate as a programmer, that's when you have to start saying, well, that's where we have room to improve in AI.
Yeah.
And
one thing I do think I remember us discovering in previous discussions about, you know, what do you do when these weird scenarios come up in an autonomous car? We've often found that it's a surprisingly effective solution for most cases to just reduce speed and come to a halt.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For most of the time, that would be probably the best approach. I mean, if you're talking about just a small percentage of autonomous cars on the road, it could still be dangerous depending upon, like, if you're on highway and you're moving at highway speeds, it could still be dangerous. But generally speaking, that seems to be the best course of action.
Like, it's just surprising how far that simple strategy will take you.
Sure. But as they were pointing out, they were saying what they wanted to do was develop AI that could encounter a new situation and react appropriately to it, even though nothing had ever been programmed specifically in the AI's programming to deal with that situation. And so that's a hard problem. That's a hard AI problem that has implications well beyond the auto industry.
Oh, sure.
But that's one of the things they're going to really be focusing on in these AI centers. But they also talked about things like the connected car, which is a lot more simple to grasp, right?
Mm-hmm.
So connected car, on its simplest form, it might be a vehicle that has an entertainment system that streams various stuff from the internet into your car. Or it may be able to give you real-time updates on things like weather or traffic.
Mm-hmm. Or the kind of thing that we already have these days where your car will connect to your phone when you get in and start playing whatever music you like
right.
to hear.
Yeah, your phone becomes the conduit and your car is really just connecting via Bluetooth or maybe a plug to utilize your phone as almost like a modem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what if you don't want it to automatically play your music when people get in the car for fear of embarrassment?
Download things other than Smash Mouth, I guess.
Yeah, I was about to say, like,
don't tell me what to do, Lauren.
I only listen to awesome music, so I don't know what, I have no frame of reference. We need to make a embarrassing music exoskeleton for me to be in so that I can understand.
Experience this new world. Yeah.
Look, I'm all about my various punk rock bands, garage rock, Lawrence Welk. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm all about that, so I don't understand this embarrassment stuff. No, but at any rate, the connected car could go much beyond that, right? You could have actual connected car that can communicate with smart home technology. And in fact, that was a lot of what we saw on display at CES. Ford, in particular.
Yeah, did they just show off their contract with Amazon?
They talked about it a lot. It was interesting. At the Ford booth, they had a car, like a big, like kind of muscle car on display that was really pretty, but I don't think had any connection to the connected car concept. For the connected car stuff, they had walls that had information about how the Amazon Alexa integration was going to work.
Mm-hmm.
But still a pretty interesting idea. So Alexa's that voice concierge system that works with Amazon's Echo product. So if you've ever seen the Echo, you can get that, put it in your home, and you can do something as simple as asking Echo, hey, what's the weather going to be like tomorrow? And it'll tell you.
Yeah. It looks a little bit like a paper towel roll.
Yeah.
It just kind of hangs out and like does stuff for you.
Yeah. But you can also connect it to things like your smart light bulbs if you have them. You could say, Alexa, dim the lights, and it'll do that automatically. Or in this case with the car, you could say, Alexa, start my car. And it could actually start your car in your driveway, which might be
to
good.
Warm it up when
warm
it's cold
it up or
outside.
Cool it down. Yeah.
So now can your connected car connect to your Hover Butler? That's what I want to know.
I would imagine you could actually do that. Yeah.
Hover
Butler, bring my jacket out to the car for me.
Or Hover Butler detects that you're experiencing road rage and hides in preparation for you. Getting home, or takes just, defensive measures,
or just puts on the smooth jazz so that you,
right.
Yeah, so
when
you
walk
out,
in, like,
yeah, and brings yeah, you a cocktail,
lowers the lights a little bit, you know.
Hover Butler is allowing you to experience a cool down period.
This chill out period is sponsored by Hover Butler. So Alexa could also allow you to do things like have your car interact with your home in the sense that, like, let's say you leave your house, you get in your car. And you could even have it set up where you use Alexa to maybe lock the smart locks on your house or arm the security system or change the lights.
Or turn down the air conditioning. Or
open the garage door for
when you're
you.
Coming home, sure. Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. So It's just meant to try and create this sort of seamless experience you would have from moving from your home to your car and back again, that kind of stuff. And we saw some of that also with other systems as well, not just Ford. Volkswagen had the Buddy, BUDD-e. That's their concept electric van. Yeah, the Buddy.
Sponsored by Pauly Shore.
Yeah.
Buddy.
Buddy. So Buddy... Buddy actually
sponsored by Forrest Gump.
I thought Buddy looked pretty nifty. Honestly, I like the design, but it's a concept car, so it's never going to hit production. We might see some of the technology work its way into other vehicles. You could also point out Volkswagen had a really compelling incentive to show off an electric vehicle in 2016 after the diesel scandal of 2015.
Yeah, which totally. I believe were our last episodes before the hiatus, right? When we were talking about the Volkswagen
issues. You and me, Joe, and Ben and Scott of Car Stuff
yeah.
came on.
That was kind of awkward. We didn't know those were going to be our final episodes before a hiatus. Otherwise, we would have said, sorry, we're going to be on pause.
Yeah. Sorry about that, folks.
But it was also interesting that beyond talking about electric vehicles and connected cars, there was also a weird conversation going on the show floor about the battling concepts of personal ownership and a fleet of vehicles. So I would argue that a lot of the connected car concepts are partially the car companies trying to create incentives for personal ownership. Right? Like the idea, because you're talking about interacting with your home. You're not going to have a third party car service that you're going to allow to connect to your home. That seems like that's a bad idea.
Sure.
Though you may want a third party car service that connects to your smartphone or something like that.
I would really be hesitant, especially anything that would allow you to control security systems.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So, I mean, the smartphone makes a little more sense because if it's not in the car, then they're not likely, and it's not like they're going to flash the drive of your phone while you're in the vehicle. At least I hope they wouldn't. So that if they did, that would be bad because they'd have a copy of your smartphone. And then next thing you know, your lights are going crazy and you're thinking it's a poltergeist. No, it's your Uber driver who's ticked off that you gave him a bad rating driving by your house.
But as we talked about in our driverless taxi episode, what a lot of forward thinkers in the auto field these days seem to be looking at getting fewer cars on the road.
Yeah. So that means that some companies are already looking forward to that as a potential pathway. And one of them was probably the most mysterious company going into CES, which is Faraday Future. Mm-hmm. Faraday Future is a kind of an internet startup. What you would get if you mashed up an internet startup with a car company? Kind of this upstart company that
is that not sort of what Tesla is?
A little bit. Tesla, I would argue, is a little closer to your traditional car company than Faraday Future is, but not by much. Mm-hmm. I would say Tesla certainly, for lack of a better term, paved the road for Faraday Future.
Oh.
I tried to come up with something else, but my brain locked on the pun.
They beat a path.
Yeah, there you go. And so Faraday Future kind of is following in the wake of Tesla, I would say. But Faraday Future's approach was to show off a really interesting and weird looking concept race car called the FF01. And when you look at this thing, it's a very weird design. I mean, the physical appearance of this car is striking. To the point where when you first look at it, you think, how the heck do you get in there?
Yeah. Like, is that a car? Is that a Batmobile?
Yeah.
Am I Batman?
Is it just a prop? Is it actually possible to get inside that thing?
To be honest, it was a fancy prop.
Yeah.
I mean, by concept car, they mean, like, I don't think it was drivable.
Yeah, and they certainly weren't. The whole idea was...
Doors are so the past.
Yeah, well, it's so 20th century.
The whole idea was, how can you grab a lot of attention, particularly in an area where you have all these established parties, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you've got Toyota and Ford and Volkswagen and Kia and Lexus and all of these companies having a presence there. How do you get noticed? And they designed this incredibly weird-looking race car, and the cool thing they had to show off wasn't really the race car. That was just to get your attention, get you in the door. They were showing off their variable platform architecture, or VPA, which is kind of their concept of car design moving forward. Vehicle design, I should say, because it's not just cars. It also involves trucks and SUVs.
Mm. And it's a modular concept, right?
Yeah, you start with a basic chassis that can be modified to be longer or shorter depending upon what kind of car you want to build. And then you have a modular battery design. So they design their batteries to be interconnected, and you add more batteries if you need more power. So an SUV would have more batteries than a subcompact car. A race car would have a lot of batteries because you need a lot of power very quickly, mm-hmm. right?
Or a big old SUV.
Exactly. Or a truck. Anything that requires a lot of torque or a lot of speed would need more batteries. Anything that was like just a basic get-around-town kind of car would need fewer. And because you could change the shape of the chassis, really the length of the chassis and the number of batteries there, it meant that you could develop these vehicles very, very quickly, at least in concept. And in fact, the race car went from sketch to physical thing in 18 months.
Wow.
Which for cars is no time at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, usually you're talking about 5 or 6 year cycles to bring a car model out, right, to show it off. And they plan on having vehicles ready by 2018, which is pretty aggressive.
That's ambitious. Yeah. I have heard it referred to on the internet as vaporware a few times.
I've seen that a lot. I don't know that I would go quite so far as to call it vaporware. I would certainly say they have tons of challenges in order to make this a viable company in that space. I wouldn't go so far as to call it vaporware yet. I think that might be a little too cynical. But the cards are stacked against them, right?
They've got their work cut out for them, those plucky kids.
Yeah. Now, fortunately, they also have very deep pockets because they're getting funding from Chinese company in the tune to billions of dollars.
Ooh.
So
when
you got billions of dollars behind you, then you can afford to take some risks. And it'll be really interesting to see if these risks pay off. And one of the things they talked about specifically was that the cars they make may never be used for personal ownership. They may end up being the company that makes cars specifically for fleets of autonomous vehicles. And they mentioned that beyond just the modular approach with the batteries, beyond the ability to change the chassis, they could also change up the drivetrain and they could incorporate autonomous technology. So you could end up with an electric vehicle that's autonomously controlled or has autonomous control. And it's just part of a fleet service like Uber or Lyft. And this could be the company that does it.
Man, I kind of hope that I want to ask the car stuff guys about this one because I'm curious to see how people who have very strong opinions about models of cars.
Yeah.
Car people are always talking about like, oh man, did you see that 67 Flirtbert? And you're like, oh yeah, the 67 was the best Flirtbert that ever Flirtbirded.
Yeah.
And people get so excited about it. So I wonder.
I'm just gonna pretend you said Cadillac, but yes.
Yeah.
Flirtberts.
Whatever.
Awesome.
You know, those classical Flirtberts.
You're saying like, is this to them what it would sound like to us if somebody were like, wouldn't it be great if all food was just in little pill form?
Right, exactly.
So
yeah.
I can tell you, I did an episode of Tech Stuff and I had Scott on the show. This was the infamous Ambush Scott episode where I had him on the show and then I said, all right, Scott, I'm going to hit you with a scenario. I want to hear your reaction. I said, imagine that it's maybe 20 years in the future where this autonomous technology is truly mature to the point where it is demonstrably better than human performance. And at that point, they outlaw human drivers and all personal car ownership is pretty much a thing of the past too. And we all just rely on vehicles that arrive on demand and autonomously take us to our destination. What do you think? And
did his head just fall off?
You could hear the moment his heart broke.
Oh.
Yeah. It was audible in that episode.
Don't break Scott's heart. Scott is like the sweetest dude.
I did apologize to him in a subsequent episode of Tech Stuff.
There will be driving approved zones. Come on now.
Yeah. You'll only be able to turn to the left, but it'll be there. That's a race car joke.
Yeah.
So at any rate, yeah, it was interesting to see a company that was head on saying this is the way we think the future is going to be. Because obviously the other car companies, I mean, that's a That's a discussion that I don't think most car companies are ready to have.
Yeah, yeah. I've never seen that kind of thing before.
Yeah. So it was really interesting from that perspective. And, you know, of course, there were a lot of other things that were on display at CES that I didn't really cover here. Oh, the SmartUp. I totally forgot about that. I went this whole thing.
Right. Yeah.
Let me just give you a quick story.
Oh, SmartMeUp.
SmartMeUp
and never stop.
Yeah. Yes. So we were talking about the RealSense technology and the ability to detect mood. This was a facial recognition software that also could detect, like, how happy are you? And it would look at your...
Could it make a grown man cry?
I'm not going to sit there and go into Rolling Stones quotes for the rest of this episode. No, it would look at your eyes and it'll look at your smile and try to judge if you were sincerely happy or if you're just like grimacing. It would try to determine your gender and your age. So I stood in front of it to see what it had to say about me. That son of a gun said I was 45 freaking years old. Perhaps coincidentally, my happiness rating dropped significantly after the 45 that popped up on the screen.
This is going to be really useful for, like, if Siri wants to know if you're gaslighting her.
Well, I was...
No, Siri, I'm serious.
I thought it was great because...
I want to know where the Tofutti stand is.
Imagine that you're running a hip club and you're like, okay, but if this thing figures out you're older than 28, you are out. You don't get to go in.
Oh, man.
Or you have to be 73% happy before we allow you into the store.
Oh, no.
Like that kind of stuff. And I thought, well, this could be a weird future, right? Where you suddenly have a different, like, it's not just authentication or verification. Now it's, are you happy enough to come inside? If you're not, then you need to go and rethink your life a little.
Oh, see, I would, but all the places where I hang out, I think that it would be like, are you depressed enough to come hang out?
Right. It'd be like, are you happy? You need to go somewhere else.
Have you listened to enough Bauhaus today?
You're right. Listen here, Mary Sunshine. You might need to turn it around and go somewhere else. So anyway, this was just kind of a quick overview of some of the cool tech I saw there. There was so much more there. I mean, the Eureka Park section, which is really the very small startups that have – usually it's largely software-based these days, but there's some that have physical products too.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing, but by the time we actually hit that part of the show, we were all burnt out. And it got to a point where after we walked down five rows of this stuff, we realized that we couldn't name a single thing we had just walked past because we were now just going through the motions, yeah. And that's when we called it.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, we're not – unless something really hits us over the head with how amazing it is, we're not going to even understand what we're seeing.
Shout out to your – co-workers who went out there with you.
Yeah,
that's
Casey and Tyler,
right?
Yeah, and Jason, our boss, was there too. And between the four of us, we were able to do a lot. We got, I think, four episodes of Forward Thinking shot, as well as, I think, six How Stuff Works Now videos.
Oh, my goodness.
And I recorded a Tech Stuff episode while I was out there.
Oof.
So that was a lot of work.
Yeah, yeah.
But
we'll try to throw up links. We've been posting links to things as they've come up on Twitter and on Facebook.
Yep.
But we'll try to do more of that or go back and check them out. And you guys, we just recorded an episode of Forward Thinking.
Yay! A whole new episode. And we'll be recording a whole nother new episode.
Yeah,
let's go record
the next one.
So, and with that in mind, guys, if you are happy that we're back, let us know it, because validation is something I'm constantly seeking.
Mm-hmm.
You can let us know on Twitter, on Google+, on Facebook. We are FW Thinking. Search FW Thinking on Facebook to find us, because we don't have the FW Thinking domain there. But if you search, we pop right up. You can leave us a message there. You can email us, fwthinking@howstuffworks.com. Let us know if there's any particular technology you're interested in, or science, or just a question about what the future might be like. Throw that in there. If you have any other comments, we'd love to hear them. And we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.